This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's full octane Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's itself, Kelly McDonald.
Here to open the gateway to your weekend. Thanks for being with us. Ramya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, hosts of the program. And Ram, all set for swinging open this gateway to this weekend and getting things started as we work our way through the month of April, just past the midpoint.
I was thinking that all week, Kels. I don't know. I don't usually pay attention too much to when we're at the middle of the month. It's not as significant as the beginning or the end. But yeah, all this week, I was like, mid-month. We're at mid-month, right on the 15th, 16th, or 14th, 15th, 16th, you know, as much as my math will let me do it.
Well, I've been laughing because a lot of us sports fans, we check our month, oh, baseball started. Oh, Jackie Robinson Day was yesterday where they honor the late Jackie Robinson. And we've been talking basketball, hockey, what's happening here, what's happening there, and Toronto Raptors being Canada's team. We stop and say, okay, not as good a year as last or the year before or several before. What's going on? And I have to laugh when anyone today, and I've got a few messages about it, saying, what's going on tonight? The Raptors have practically nobody playing. So that's not quite true. What they mean is none of their regular starters, some of their bench guys even. It's a lean crew. And then the question comes out, are they trying to do poorly so that they can get a good pick when it comes to the draft? So, and again, it's one of those waiting games, those watching things we're doing. And as fans of the team, not much else you can do, except what I like to do, Rum, in these cases, just as I did with the Blue Jays, as they were bringing these young players in, just watch these guys get better. Watch them make their mistakes that make you grit your teeth, but then also see them blossom and say, man, you know what? That guy in a few years is going to be amazing.
Wow.
So that's been one of those things that's been going on this mid-April, because we're always talking in the spring, so much great sports. But we also talk, Rum, so much great content ahead here on Kelly and Company. Let's take a look. Uber Eats has rolled out a new story feature and Instagram integration in Canada. John Beeler will be here in a bit with the update.
All right, let's talk a little bit about travel. British Columbia and the Atlantic provinces lead a ranking of outstanding destinations to explore as the pandemic wanes. And we're going to learn more about this and the top Canadian destinations with vacay.ca.
Publisher has moved, a popular publisher has moved to put audio on a streaming platform. And Ryan Huey, he has an update for us. We'll get into that conversation with him during Hour 2 here on Kelly and Company.
Hello, AMI. This is Dustin Butterfield calling from Red Deer, Alberta. 1 year ago, I was on Kelly and Company discussing the Our Community blind hockey episode that aired on AMI TV. Our Central Alberta Bullseye blind hockey team has grown this season, and we've gained valued friendships, even though pandemic restrictions have canceled most of our ice times. I love para sports, and we all know that they are incredibly valuable to individuals and communities. So we are looking forward to next season and to introducing our hockey players to the para sport of goalball. In the last year, I subscribed to a lot of great AMI content, including the Neutral Zone, Kelly and Company, Now with Dave Brown, and other AMI TV programs. And the content has been fantastic. So thank you very much, and please keep up the good work.
A few moments ago, I sent a response letting some of those who were CC'd on the message sent to us with this beautiful Dustin message and his time. I love the fact that he lets us know what's happening out there with Parasports, his love for it, and harkens back to his appearance here on the show. That's absolutely wonderful, and we love hearing from you, but mostly the fact that you take the time, share with us, and give us an update, and it's what a positive one at a time where things are a little tough. I really appreciated that, Rum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Dustin. I mean, we love hearing about how the content and the connections we build over here, the information that we spread affects in a positive way and really brings people together out there, because really what we are doing is bringing the community together. That's the hope, right?
And, you know, it's something that's hard to do, particularly at this time. So hearing that and knowing that you're enjoying the content on AMI TV and here over on AMI Audio makes it that much more wonderful for us to know, okay, we're doing some of the things right and providing the content you're looking for. And thanks a lot for that. We always love to hear from people. A little note here from Devin, actually, and it's from the Radio Association of Canada celebrating World Amateur Radio Day on Sunday, April 18th. This year marks the 96th anniversary of the International Radio Union, which was founded at the 1925 International Radio Telegraph Conference in Paris. Amateur radio, home but never alone, is the theme for Amateur Radio Day 2021. The theme acknowledges that during our physical distancing to reduce the threat of COVID-19, amateur radio stands out as a welcome respite because of its wealth of activities and opportunities. On World Amateur Radio Day, all radio amateurs are invited to take to the airwaves to share global goodwill with other amateurs. And this is from Devin Wilkins, VE3Dev. Thank you for passing that on to us. Everybody enjoy the special day. Take some time to have fun. Used to do a lot of that stuff when I was an active ham. And I totally love the fact that it is so true. We talk about people, drop in and see someone, talk to some, visit. But there is so much you can do on an amateur radio basis, communicating with people all around the world and cutting back on those isolation concerns. Google Earth has a new video feature that puts a spotlight on the impact of climate change.
The tool was unveiled Thursday, billed as the biggest update to Google Earth in 5 years. The video feature draws upon nearly 4 decades of satellite imagery to vividly illustrate how climate change has affected glaciers, beaches, forests, and other places around the world. Google says they worked in concert with several government agencies, including NASA and its European counterpart, to put the project together. One climate scientist previewed the video and believes this will get people to understand the scope of climate change and could change many people's minds about the scale of the impact of humans on the environment. Todd Ant, ABC News.
So when you hear these kinds of things, and it always blows my mind, Google Earth, and I can't see enough to really appreciate any of it on any device. I just hear a lot of what people say and what they see when they look. I don't know what enjoyment, if you've played around much with it, but when you think about showing people stuff, and I think show is a little better than tell, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, Kels, especially when we're hearing the back and forth that is the argument of climate change. So here we are with more proof, more pictures, and more history of information.
Yeah, and I think it always goes to say that I don't want to have someone chide at me or lecture me. Oh, gosh, that looks ugly. Wow, what a change.
Exactly.
From
you. See it for yourself.
That's really retreating. Where'd the ice go? Whoa. Oh, and that's where the water is going. Not good. And that's what I think more of us need to see. We're going to take a break. Producer Jeff Ryman, he's going to join us next. It's Friday as we swing open the gateway to your weekend, which means we'll kick things off with lifestyle headlines in a moment. Having an urge, a thought, maybe to leave us a message? Hey, man, do it. Go with it. 1-866-509-4545 is the number. 1-866-509-4545. Mention what show it's for and that it's okay to play your message on air. And if we can, we certainly will do it. Always love hearing from you. Feedback at AMI.ca if you just want to pop an email over and ask some questions about AMI TV, AMI Tele, or over here at AMI Audio. And on Twitter, you can follow along, see what's happening with the shows as we are on air live, or just what's happening at AMI Audio. And that's at AMI Audio. Ram Yamuth and Kelly McDonald, we're the hosts of the show. Thanks for being with us as we're swinging open the gateway to your weekend. We welcome in Jeff Ryman. He's here on Fridays at this time to talk lifestyle headlines.
From fashion to travel, pets and more, we cover it all on the Lifestyle Report with me, Jeff Ryman.
Happy Fridays, Jeffrey. Thanks for being with us.
Happy Friday. Yeah, no problem, guys.
Sir, where are we starting?
Yeah, so this article, and kind of topical on the show today, has to do with travel. Now, I know in segment four, so in about half an hour, we'll be talking to Adrian from vacay.ca about some of the top travel destinations within our country, within our beautiful country, I should say. You know, once the pandemic starts to ease just a little bit, I mean, probably a little bit later now than expected, but he'll come on to talk to us about that. But I found another really interesting sort of study survey by Expedia, and it has to do with the ranking of Canada's friendliest cities and towns of 2021. So kind of amongst the same topic, but kind of different at the same time. And I've noticed a sneak little piece preview here is some of the towns do cross over between the top travel destinations and the top friendliest cities. So just keep that in mind as well as we go throughout the show. But I guess, you know, a lot of people are asking the question, like, how did people pick these specific cities, these specific towns as deemed the friendliest? Maybe there was an outstanding dinner recommendation. That always is good. Whenever there's good food, I feel like there's always usually a friendly atmosphere not too far away, or you greeted with smiles or hellos, you know, even under the masks of 2021 with the pandemic. What was the overall energy like? Was it feel good? There might have been some random acts of friendliness and kindness throughout these cities, you know, so I think it's just an overall collection of how people felt about these specific towns and cities within Canada. And let's face it, Canada, we're just happy people here. So not surprising one bit. And there's probably a lot of cities and towns that did not make this list. Mind you, this is the top 20. I don't even know if I'll get through all 20. But it is kind of fun just to dive into these types of things to see where those friendly faces and voices may be. So the number one on the list is Radium Hot Springs in British Columbia. And apparently it's a perfect spot to experience the great outdoors. And for those that enjoy hiking, there are many trails to explore in that area. Of course, lots of friendly figures out in that realm of the woods. So BC seems to be a pretty hot spot on both this list and the list I'm sure Adrian will get to as well. So just keep that in mind. Digby, Nova Scotia. Love that name. Apparently, they've got great food. They've got great food out in Digby, Nova Scotia. Never have made it out to Nova Scotia. It's definitely on my bucket list. But in terms of friendliness, you know, East Coasters, they just know how to do it differently. And you know, I think, you know, whenever you can incorporate food into some things, it just puts people in a good mood in general anyways. Number three on the list, Niagara-on-the-Lake here in Ontario. I think, you know, there's a lot of friendly vibes going on. I've been there before. I think you guys probably have as well.
Yeah,
it's quite times. The town. Lots of wineries, of course. Of course, there's Niagara Falls. So
Shaw Festival. That's what like schools. I remember in school they take you there. I've done some shooting of Blindsided there, and just pieces for ATW.
Yeah, it's quite a beautiful area to get to. Baddeck, Nova Scotia, another East Coast city on here on the Cape Breton Islands. So another Nova Scotia city, town being on this list. Again, no surprise. Drumheller, Alberta. Apparently the dinosaur capital of the world. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's where the digs are, right? You've got, I believe out there, that's where you can go. And there's a bunch of open area where fossils have been found.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That sounds like a pretty cool place to bring your little ones. And of course, I mean, who doesn't like to see dinosaurs from time to time? So the dinosaur capital of the world.
Or at least the dinosaur graveyard.
St. John, New Brunswick. Picturesque views, again, East Coast, beautiful place. Would love to go there one day. Is number six, Gatineau, Quebec. One of the most beautiful historic landscapes in the Western Quebec City that neighbors Ottawa, close to many trails. So that's number seven on the list.
Yeah, that's what Karen McGee was talking about the other day, right, Rum? We were on the show. She was talking about the areas, the trails, just the whole view over there. And again, a nice area to go to, so close to Ottawa and our capital region. So really nice to
just
see that.
Get active and do a whole bunch of things. It sounded so diverse. Yeah,
it does.
Mm-hmm. Thunder Bay is on the list at number eight. Tons of adventures basically all year long. You can go fishing basically anytime in the fall and in the spring and summer, ice fishing in the winter, tons of outdoor activities at number eight on the list. Number nine, this one's really no surprise, Banff, Alberta. Again, one of the most picturesque places you can probably get to, not only in Canada, but throughout the entire world. You can go through a nice guided walking
bunch
tour.
Of the film people go there. They have the big film fest where so many industry people gather. Really popular. Yep. Because you can do so much too. Within, you can golf in the morning or vice versa and go skiing. Like it's so crazy.
Yeah. And I'll just finish with this one. Number 10 on the list, Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, PEI. Again, another place that's on my bucket list. Heard it's beautiful. People sound very, very friendly. Great food, I hear, as well. Definitely want to get out to PEI sooner rather than later. So just keep some of these in mind. And there's 10 more on this list. I'll put it up on the blog. So if you guys want to go check that
list.
Out.
When you really think about it, there's so many cool things. Even down to Thunder Bay, we've had Doug McQuaker on here talking about different things going on there. And all I've heard is things like even going to school, going to Lakehead there. It's a beautiful campus.
Yeah, sounds very. And again, these are just the top 10 for this year of the friendliest cities. I think, you know, the majority of cities and towns within Canada could be, you know, on this list for various reasons, between food, between having friendly people, between having some great views and all that stuff. I think every place is almost deserving to be within this list. But I just thought that'd be kind of a fun way to kick off the segment, kind of a little bit of a lifestyle travel piece that I came across and sort of warms us up for what we can expect in segment four with Adrian. This next article that I have, I was kind of saving it for health, but I thought it was almost a cross between health and lifestyle anyways, because apparently this is from CNN.com off of their health section, and apparently children's healthiest meals of the day come from school cafeterias. Mind you, this is something in the States where I feel like this may be a little bit bigger. I know specifically in just from my personal experience and people that I know, there wasn't, you know, typical lunch programs at the schools that I've been to here in Southern Ontario. That could be totally different anywhere you go, but I know in the States it's a pretty big deal. But researchers analyzed the diets of over 21,000 children and 40,000 adults between 2003 and 2018, and found that the percentage of poor nutritional quality foods consumed from schools actually declined quite substantially, from 55% to 24% over a 15-year period. That was published on Monday from JAMA Network, or JAMA Network Open. So very interesting study that they dove into. The decrease mainly occurred after 2010, which is when the Healthy, Hungry, Free Kids Act was passed. Yep. This was in the United States, but I know they've done something similar here in Canada since then. Because I recall in high school at the cafeteria, instead of, say, having deep fried French fries, they would start baking them. Or instead of having chicken nuggets that they would throw in the fryer, they would put them in the oven. So I know something similar has come up here north of the border as well. So I'd expect that some of this carries over here into Canada. But, you know, just hearing that headline that the kids' healthiest meals come from school cafeterias, I guess it's kind of good because that means the schools have been implementing more of a healthy diet for our kids. But at the same time, what does that say for parents, you know, and just the kids' lifestyles outside of school? Kind of worrisome on that end. So well, I don't know if this is good or bad.
And that's what they talked about, especially with when the determination of schools closing and things like that during the pandemic, because they were the healthiest meals or full balanced meals. A lot of people, due to economic concerns in households and food issues, this was where they were getting a lot of their great meals. I think back to the meals that we could buy in high school and stuff like that. Good grief. I'm not even going to get into that because that'll take us back to the bones in Alberta. It really, back in that day, the quality was terrible. And when you think about this problem, when people are saying, well, kids, we can't have them in school and all that, and some people, families saying, well, man, what am I going to feed them? Where am I getting the money and to give them something healthy?
Go ahead, Rum.
I was just going to say, I think that this is something that's been kind of up and downish when it comes to nutrition at school, regardless of where. But, you know, in North America, just that there's a budget-friendly option. There's what people are used to in terms of culturally, you know, how much we're taking in. And I think that there has to be maybe something more, like when we're talking about fitness and how much daily physical activity, I think that's what they were calling it, people at school were getting. Something like that, where there's a bit of a standard on what goes on and what people get to eat when they're at school.
Yeah. And I think just the lifestyle and everything that goes into being at school, the schools, especially here, you know, just recalling my personal experiences, you're right. The daily fitness that I think, or daily physical activity, DPA, as we called it, you know, you'd have that in partner with recess and, of course, phys ed. You would always have to do that. Pair that with some good nutritional value, and it's probably a recipe for success. But just the lifestyles, and like you mentioned, Kelly, just the economic side of things, healthy food is quite expensive. And I'm sure we've touched on this before, probably with Julia, is that, you know, a $1 cheeseburger at McDonald's, you know, obviously tastes great, but the nutrition probably isn't there. $1, I don't know what that could necessarily buy you healthy-wise at a grocery store, maybe some fruits and vegetables at most. But, you know, with rising produce numbers, it's just kind of hard for a lot of families.
Yeah, and people don't. They'd rather eat that cheeseburger. Just depends how many days a week you can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeffy. That's some great stuff there. And it really gives you something to think about, especially that last one. Well, both, because now I'm dreaming about, some of those nice places. Let's go look for dinosaur bones. But really cool to see what was on that list. And amazing. Thank you. Jeff Ryman will return to the program a little later on when we do our Cut for Time segment. But he joins us on Fridays for Lifestyle. Wednesdays, he's back to talk health headlines right here on Kelly and Company. We'll take a break. And in a moment, John Beeler, he joins us for our app update. It's Kelly and Company. Welcome back to the program. Our first airing of the show weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Then we have a repeat at 5 midnight and 5 a.m. in the morning. So check us out when you can, no matter which way you can, on a repeat or live with us. Always appreciate you hanging in. Rummy Muth and Kelly McDonald, and on Fridays we swing open the gateway to your weekend. We try to keep things pretty light, We had some great travel stuff there with Jeff Ryman. I really must say that, Rum. Some great images coming to mind. But mainly, if you haven't been to a place, it's those certain tourist things that you've heard of or just where somebody from that area says, you know, if you're ever in that neck of the woods, check out, oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. All I can say is the list's getting longer, Kels.
Well, at first, when I heard some of the places, right, like you stop and say, well, hold on, what is, oh, yeah. Then you start recalling things people have said about those places.
Yes. But just going to have to wait just a little longer.
Yeah, right now it's fine to dream. Probably not going too far anywhere right now with everything going on. So just dream and imagine, get that list going. And I know lots of people are doing that. Folks, on Fridays, we like to find out what's going on in the world of apps and some different technology like that. So let's bring on John Beeler.
This is The App Show, unlocking software secrets for smartphones, tablets, TVs, and more.
So many great destinations out your way, John. When you think about people just loving BC, I used to wonder, and when we had a chance to do our show out there, it was actually became insulting because you tried to look for people to say anything bad about the area. Here in Ontario, there's no shortage of people saying, yeah, you know what, I hate being here, this and that. But out there, oh, I love it. What? It was just constant. So you guys are very lucky people when times are normal times.
Yeah. The key thing, though, is if you do hear anything negative, that's so that we convince you not to come here.
That's right. For the overflow that all the people heading from the east to the west, right?
Yeah, it's awful out here. It snows all the time. It's
yeah. That's why we pack Friday for the BC people come on the show often. It's, oh, it's a great. No, no, you would hate it out here. No, don't even bother. The dampness will kill you. In our first topic today, QTCL's fold and roll concept transfers a 6.87 phone into a 10-inch tablet. I think I'm saying that right with my numbers.
Yes, this is a really interesting development. We've seen a lot of folding phone technology in the last, say, a year. It's kind of really come into its own. It's still pretty expensive. And there's also not a lot of maybe use cases that people really see the value in a folding phone. But TCL has taken it one step further that might actually be a little bit more compelling. And I'm actually really excited to see this in person when we can. And like you mentioned, it's called the fold and rolled. So, you know, we've seen like the Samsungs, the Huawei's, they have these folding phones that basically take a fairly large phone and let you double the screen size and it opens up into a seamless mini tablet-y type of display. Mm-hmm. But what the fold and roll does is it does that and then it has this extra slider out version of a screen. So you essentially get a tri-fold screen, if that makes sense. So imagine you're holding like a brochure that's been folded three times. This lets you open it once and then slide out to have three full panels that are all seamlessly connected. And you actually get a nice 10-inch tablet, which is perfect for reading, perfect for, you know, consuming content, that type of thing. The interesting part of this, though, is TCL came onto the mobile market, kind of took it by storm last year, coming up with some really compelling, very affordable flagship quality phones. And this is the first time we might actually see a premium folding device at maybe a not so premium price.
Okay. Do you know what those premium prices used to be? Like, was it just so far up that a lot of people weren't using it even though it was available?
Yeah, like the Samsungs, there's a few of them out there. They all start north of $2,000. So, you know, when you're looking at like the premium iPhone, the premium Samsung non-folding phone, you're in the 15, 16, maybe 1700, depending on, you know, your memory configurations. And these were kind of like mid-tier phones, but at north of $2,000. So
wow.
No pricing has been announced yet for the TCL, but they're hoping to have it come out by the end of this year. So it could be just a really interesting disruptor in the market for folding phones and make them a little bit more accessible to people.
And my thought is that if they're able to do this, and especially with the price points, then we may start seeing more of this kind of technology in other existing brands.
Yeah, well, they're going to be forced to compete, right?
Yep. And exactly.
That's always the great thing. And, you know, TCL's kind of dominated the TV market for the last few years by coming out with very high quality TVs at a very low cost relative to the competitors. So,
and that's such a, if they can get that to, for people, because we're already seeing how much phones just outrageous cost just for the sake of, without even really, why are these things? Well, you can get on a plan, don't worry about it. But when you look at something like this, you really hope something can be done to make people say, yeah, I could really use that instead of, you know, have it in a deeper, a shallower, deep, further in a pocket, so I'm not bending over and losing my phone.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It can't get any bigger.
TCL's done a few interesting things too with their mobile phones, just to make a name for themselves. But last year when they launched their Pro phone, the 10L, they actually gave you a TV with it. So nice. It was already a low cost phone, but with a flagship sort of set of specs, and they give you a TV. So who knows what they're going to give you with the folding phone too.
But that's kind of nice too, because again, we always go by who's the big brands, what are you hearing the most about, but you show up at someone's house, see their new neat little folding phone you had on the wall. What's that? Oh yeah, that's like the matching TV.
Yeah.
Okay, this is cool. Let's talk about the second thing on your list. I think this is supposed to be fun. Uber Eats rolled out a new stories feature and Instagram integration in Canada. So are we trying to make this more social experience on Uber Eats?
I think what this lets restaurants do, and this is something where we're all using these delivery services now because we're stuck at home. And the nice thing is that whenever you, like I was doing this the other day, I was looking for something for dinner and I found a style of restaurant I wanted, but I didn't see any photos of, you know, what does this dish look like? Because not all of them have full integration with, you know, a nice photographic menu, everything like that. This allows those restaurants and service providers to have their Instagram and even stories. So you can actually see actual photos, maybe they've, you know, reposted from their customers or they've done their own, but it just gives you a little bit more in a real world setting what the food you're actually going to get is going to look like. And so having that tied right into the Uber Eats app, I think is really going to be handy. So you don't have to go somewhere else and, you know, follow a bunch of links to try to find that restaurant if it's a restaurant you're not familiar with, for example. So I think this is going to help the restaurants sell more food because they can showcase it however they want, not just by the limitations of the menuing system within Uber Eats, but also tie in all their Instagram. And, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of time photographing their food. And so this is a great way to showcase what you have on offer.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, and that's what we get into, Rumya, a lot of that, the conversation of, like, we flare out and say, hey, take a picture of the wings that you're eating and send them to me. And again, for a lot of people using Instagram, I guess that's a great way to get that quick snapshot, because we do it with a menu. You look at a menu and you think, oh, that looks good.
Yeah, of course, Kels. And I see it in other platforms too. Like if you do a lot of Google reviewing and scrolling through people's ratings of different restaurants, and these are just different platforms you go on to, even if you found originally the restaurant on Uber Eats or other platforms like Skip the Dishes, right? You're probably doing some more research anyway to say, is the skip score really reflective of? So it's nice to have that kind of integration, so you're not really going on and off platforms to see what things look like. And even just by doing that in extension, some more information, John.
Yeah, I just really like having it all integrated in one place. And especially when you're like, oh, I wonder what, you know, their special is this week. And, you know, if this restaurant's on the ball, they'll probably have that on Instagram. But it's a little bit more involved for them to have that updated in the Uber Eats app, for example.
Wonderful. I want to go to some not so good news. Second week in a row, we're hearing about leaked accounts. Another 500 million accounts have leaked online, and LinkedIn's the hot seat.
Yeah, this is kind of related to what we talked about last week with the Facebook leak. Mm-hmm. A little bit more information has sort of come out over this past week. And one of the things is that these are essentially accounts that have been scraped from their public profiles. So like LinkedIn and Facebook, for example, they were not actually hacked. These are the the perpetrators in this case, they were using tools and they were going to Facebook and your public profile and scraping it and creating a profile of all the publicly facing information and detail that you had. And it was also revealed this week that LinkedIn was also the subject of this. So none of the private information that you might have on your LinkedIn account or by extension, the Facebook account.
Right.
This is basically a bundled set of profiles that have been packaged up for sale on the dark web. And what it does is it just sort of proves that you need to be really careful, even what you're putting out there publicly, you know, because there's still quite a lot of information, things like your full name, your email address, your phone numbers, gender, and other types of details that you might share through a, you know, details about your employment history or the type of work that you're doing, that type of thing. You need to be really thoughtful about what you're actually putting out there, because anything that's on the internet that's publicly viewable is probably going to be scraped and copied by a robot script that will just take that and just add it to a pile. And then, like we talked last week, that's how identity theft happens. That's also how they can go in and get into your accounts to do all kinds of different things that you don't want them to be doing.
I've been noticing more of this, John, not just with some professional examples like LinkedIn, right? But all over social media. I mean, for people who've signed up for Clubhouse recently, the first thing that I notice is they say people use their real names on this social media platform. So you're putting a lot of your identity out there. And I feel like it multiplies. The more things you're on with your real name, the more compilation of your information people have out there to create these packages of identity for you, right? And if all your profiles are public, people don't even necessarily need to be themselves on, let alone bots, but people don't need to be on these social media sites themselves. It can just be a quick Google search of your full name and they have all these different access points to your info. So it is pretty scary in that sense once we start getting into that side of public profiles.
Absolutely. And what's even kind of scarier to a degree, I mean, outside of the identity theft angle, is the fact that they can actually create a new profile for you on a social platform, like, say, Instagram or LinkedIn, and use a lot of your same information, use your photo, but maybe have it tied somewhere else so they actually get all the details, right? And so it's basically it's an imposter account. And that can be very difficult to actually shut down and prove. You know, it's just a big hassle, basically.
Yeah.
And so the takeaway here is just be a little bit thoughtful of what you've actually put out onto the internet, because just assume somebody's scraping it and compiling a list of all this freely accessible public information.
No kidding. Before we go, really quickly, soon the internet will make its own cat photos, so it doesn't need our help anymore. Is that right?
That's right. There's actually a computer-generated website called thiscatdoesnotexist.com, and it uses artificial intelligence to actually generate cats. So a big thing for me is I like to post photos of my cat on the internet, but essentially now AI can actually create cats from composite images of cats. And, you know, it's just a matter of time before the cats take over the world, I think.
We're stealing their identity.
That's right. This will be my new LinkedIn profile, a computer generated.
Oh, there you go. See, it helped you get out of identity theft. John, thank you so much, man. We appreciate your talks every Friday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right, John Wheeler
of the App Show. Sorry.
Folks, you're all my witnesses. John Beeler, The App Show, you can check them out Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern right here on AMI Audio, and he'll be back next Friday for our weekly app update. Coming up next, British Columbia and the Atlantic provinces need to have a ranking of outstanding destinations, as Jeff was talking earlier. We'll get into that conversation in a moment. In Western Canada, you can find AMI Audio, TELUS, channel 889, and in Cogeco in Ontario, you look for us on channel 596. Visit ami.ca/schedules for a list of channel locations in your area. Kelly McDonald with Rumya Mutham, host of the program. Thanks for being with us. It's Kelly and Company. No matter how you're listening into the program, we appreciate your time, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Ram, an interesting little item came my way earlier in the week that I want to share a little bit here. And this is about wastewater. And about a year after Ottawa began testing wastewater for signs of COVID-19, the project has actually proven its value quite valuable.
Researchers at the University of Ottawa and Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario say the virus shows up in wastewater often before people even know they're sick. It means the data can predict days ahead of time whether caseloads are going to go up or down, and drives Ottawa public health decisions about lockdowns. The project is also now testing for variants of concern, and shows the B.1.1.7 variant is rising at a very rapid rate. Mia Rabson, The Canadian Press, Ottawa.
So many of us can stop wow. and we can say, wow, hey, we know it's rising and stuff like that. But every little thing that will help down the road till we get to that day where we'll know these things ahead of time, where we have so many things in our society now we don't worry about because testing, management of said illnesses or viruses or, you know, bacterium, we're able to predict and know so much stuff or catch it beforehand. So it's interesting, as much as the pandemic is scaring the bejeepers out of us and mm-hmm. what it's doing to us and the concerns and threatening our society and the people around us and ourselves. One thing we're seeing, Ramya, is what we are doing. Where are we better than we were when this first came out, when we knew nothing compared to what we know now? Yeah. I mean, you can look and say parts of the world are really struggling right now, worse than they did first round of the pandemic. But then when you see these different scientific things going on, this certain information being explored, avenues being chased down, which is what we want, ways of predicting, ways of treating us. So if we do end up in the hospital, of making more people able to survive this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's always surprising me the angles in which science comes out with this information. I remember early last year when we were talking about bringing in COVID on the bottom of our shoes, right? And how the virus is being brought in that way and being able to tell or be mindful of that kind of stuff. So same thing
surfaces,
with the wastewater.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. And how long they live and things like that, where, you know, at that time frame, that was huge information. In this time frame, this one with the wastewater is really important information. And also just how it translates, right? So they're saying that they're able to tell how much the outbreak is going to be before we even realize we're getting sick. So what does that translate back into for us actually? Is it a preventative thing, or could it be more of which populations need to be isolating, things like that? It's just fascinating, Kels, to think about how it's going to help us even further along.
Yeah, it's a really great predictor that we really, really like to kind of see all these experiments. And yes, some of them will, Ramya, turn out to lead us down kind of a dead end, but we need to chase down those dead ends in the name of science.
Yep, and they're keeping us posted. All right, switching back over to travel, as we did earlier on in the show, British Columbia and the Atlantic provinces lead in ranking of outstanding destinations to explore as the pandemic wanes. And joining us now to give us a more extensive rundown of the top Canadian travel destinations, going to make our hearts melt a little bit, is Adrian Bridgebassey, managing editor at vacay.ca. Adrian, thanks for coming on Kelly and Company.
Hey, glad to be here.
Oh, we're very excited to talk about travel. We're all kind of holding ourselves down a little bit, but still, we want to hear about it. Window shop. So start off by giving us a little bit of background on vacay.ca and what you do, the kind of content you provide for people.
Sure. So vacay.ca, we focus on Canadian travel. We have been for about 8 years now, and it's magazine content, great photography, some of Canada's best travel journalists contribute. And every year we put out a list of the best places to travel for the coming year. Often that list is based on where major events are happening. Destinations have special anniversaries. But for 2020, given the situation the world is in, we said, what places are you going to want to go to as the pandemic winds down? And that means late summer, early fall. What are the destinations that are going to uplift you, that are going to make you feel safe, and that'll have the space that you need to still stay connected to nature? And, you know, we're dealing with some level of post-traumatic stress, all of us. We may not want to be right into crowds all the way right away. So some spaces that have some nature around them.
Well, it's really great because you look at what we're thinking about. Maybe we can't, you know, not going to be able to domestically or to leave the country, just stay domestic. So you guys came up with the top 20 places to travel within Canada. For time reasons, can you give us the top 10?
Sure. Yeah, I'll start at number 10, Charlottetown, capital of Prince Edward Island. I've done a wonderful job with handling COVID, and also just a great place to be for every reason you can imagine from the tourism standpoint. Next, also on the Atlantic Canada, we've got St. John's and the Irish Loop. If you want to have a great time and feel welcome and embrace people, Newfoundland's the place to be. They're about as friendly a group of people as you'll find in the world. Mm-hmm. And St. John's and that whole Irish Loop is a beautiful road trip. Another great road trip at number 8 is Quebec City. We're all familiar with that, but we may not be as familiar with going up the St. Lawrence coast to Tadoussac and that beautiful area. Wonderful whale watching, great food, and an awesome road trip. Number 7, we've got a number of wine destinations on our list, going back to the idea that we'll have fall travel and a lot of harvest season festivals. Nova Scotia's wine area, Gaspar and Annapolis Valley, they've got award-winning wines, internationally recognized, and some beautiful country. There, number 6, Ontario's growing wine region, Prince Edward County. They've got a few wineries that are having 20th anniversary celebrations this year.
Yes.
So they rank number 6 on our list. Number 5, Victoria and Cowichan Valley out on Vancouver Island. They're the westernmost destination in our ranking this year. And Victoria is really working as an environmental leader on the tourism aspect. They're one of the world's leaders on green tourism movement. And the Cowichan Valley, just an hour north of the city, a really fascinating area that's growing wine in a rainforest area, almost unheard of in the world, but it's quite fascinating what they're doing there. Number 4, Dawson City in Yukon, just one of the most incredible cities, towns really in the country. It's the entire town is a Parks Canada site, so it's just tons of history. And you go there, and you just you get immersed in this real culture of adventurism, and all of the excitement that goes around that. Number 3, Banff and Lake Louise. They were number 1 on our rankings this year. Number 3 this year, or last year, sorry, for 2019. Banff and Lake Louise, the eternal, you know, if we were going to just do this every year, where do you want to go in Canada and just rank them as evergreen way, Banff would probably be number 1 every year. It's just such a beautiful place. Number 2, Cape Breton Island, one of my favorite places in the country. Nova Scotia, in October, they have Celtic Colors. It's a fascinating music-driven festival that showcases that heritage of that island and its Scottish history. And number 1, wine region here in British Columbia, home to the most wine producers in the country. It's the South Okanagan, which stretches from Penticton down to Osoyoos near the U.S. border. It's about a 90-minute drive through the region, full of about over 120 wineries. Some of them just absolutely spectacular what they're producing. And coming in the fall, they've got just one wine event after another, one harvest event after another. And it's home to Canada's only desert. It's very desert south of the Arctic. It's a very temperate area. They golf year-round. And they've got some fascinating nature activities and really driven a lot of the growth. Even the first wine grapes planted were by the Indigenous community. So there's that cultural aspect to discover as well.
So much history. I feel like we're swiping through this in terms of like the picturesque as well. And I'm curious, thank you for running down that list, but did the pandemic alter any decisions in the list? Because you're talking about putting in things because of events and other cultural things going on, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, usually the rankings are often driven by our major cities because they're the ones that are having major activities and major events each year. And at one point, the destination that was number 2 on our list, this was, say, in December, was the South Shore of Nova Scotia, because this is the centennial anniversary of the Blue Nose, our famous schooner. It's on the Canadian dime. They're having a massive festival. They plan to have a massive festival that was going to attract international travelers, and we still kept it on the list. It's number 15, but that was an area where the pandemic really affected us as we entered this third wave, and we saw that travel wasn't going to open up as quickly as we thought. They had major celebrations planned for August, which might still go off, but I think it'll be subdued for sure.
Well, I found on that list there some, a couple of the places that I've always thought kind of that mysterious, I wonder what it's like being Quebec City for one of them, but certainly Dawson. So I can imagine lots of people saying the same thing. And, oh, I want to go to Dawson, especially, you know, the Midnight Sun?
The Midnight Sun. I was there in June a couple of years ago, and it blew my mind. You know, just what the energy that goes all through the night in the town, and yeah, it's really one of the most interesting places in the country.
So cool, Adrian. Tell us where we can go to get more information about this. I'm assuming vacay.ca, but if there's anything else you want to point to on the site, because this is really nice stuff and great kind of list and things to look at for information.
Yeah, vacay.ca, the main article is still on the homepage at the moment. And it also has an article from Linda Barnard, who was my colleague at the Toronto Star for many years, focusing on the South Okanagan and why it's number one. And if you click on the tab on the navigation bar of the site, there's Best Places to Travel in Canada tab, and that'll show all of the articles related to the 20 best places that we've chosen. And one cool thing this year, we've got a sponsor. Its name is Tripsy. It's a travel trivia app, and we've got little cute trivia items for each of the places on the list because of their tie-in.
Thank you, Adrian. Hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, folks. Take care.
We were speaking to Adrian Bridgebassy of vacay.ca.
We'll be back with the start of Hour 2 of Kelly & Company.
When you tune into the show in the middle of an interview,
will you wait for Willie? That was a great one to get your lips all moving around.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers?
You're listening to Kelly & Company on AMI Audio.
Programming note from our friends over at The Pulse. Saturday on the program, Joita speaks to recent immigration reforms for people with disabilities with Toronto Star immigration reporter Nicholas Hume and Professor Jay Dolmich from the University of Waterloo. On Sunday, the program, Joita discusses the significance of the parasport movement and the challenges faced by athletes during the pandemic and the upcoming Paralympic Games with Laura Messiner of Western University. That's all on The Pulse this weekend, also available, like our show, as a podcast. Ramya Muth and Kelly McDonald, this is the second hour of Kelly & Company. We still have the chatty bookshelf ahead and cut for time, so stick around. We'll get into those segments. But first, let's bring in Bill Shackleton. On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we bring him in for The Buzz, and we sit back and chat about a few things. Hello, Willie. How are you?
Oh, we're doing good.
Yeah, lots of great stuff here in the articles you have for us. Which one are we starting with?
Itsy Bitsy Spider. Actually, this is an extremely interesting article out of Reuters news agency.
Okay.
Basically, music created by a spider's web is as spooky as it sounds, but it can help us talk to them. This is really very, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology folks have developed a virtual spider's web. What they've done is they've created all these, every strand of the spider's web has a musical tone. And that is, they believe that that's how spiders communicate with each other while they're building a web. Spiders do. And what they did with this web is they broke it up and then they're trying to figure out how spiders rebuild it. Spiders are extremely complicated. You know, a spider's web is, oh, my God, get it out of my face. You just crush it. But have you ever stopped to figure out how a spider builds a web? The millions of strands that it takes to actually build it.
So cool.
Yes. Well, the hope is that they can learn to communicate with a spider and manipulate it. And one of the things they want to be able to do is create 3D printing. When you figure, well, first of all, a spider doesn't need any instructions how to build a web. It just does it. They want to be able to figure out how you could build electronics, with how spiders could be taught to build miniature electronics. When you talk about, if you have to build a 3D model of a strand, of a molecular strand or anything that small, like that could be part of an electronic part, that they want to be able to teach spiders how to do that. Rather than having to program a computer how to do it, they want to be able to teach spiders how to do some of these things that are far more complicated that we couldn't do, that you could do, that the computers perhaps couldn't do, that spiders perhaps can or might be able to do.
Wow. This,
it's really far out.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is like way more intricate than anything I've ever heard regarding spider webs. I mean, I'm like, okay, they use them to catch bugs and that's it.
Yeah, it's, and when you think about, because of our impressions of spiders, the creepiness of them, you get like, oh my goodness,
cool,
this is
though.
Like, whoa, they are, they're certainly cool.
They're but such artistic creatures.
So many creatures, insects, whatever you want to say, folks, are really, no matter what, no matter how much, they're really not here, a lot of them, to impress us. The intelligence is so phenomenal. And when you think about, well, how could we use this? What could we do with this?
We're
spinning this silk.
Reach out to assistance?
Yeah.
From spiders?
Well,
I mean,
before a computer,
wow.
Maybe.
Well, what if you could tell a spider, a poisonous spider, not to bite? I mean, there's all these things that, or I'm afraid of a spider, don't build it where there's human contact. You could tell, I mean, there's lots of things that you could tell a spider if you could communicate with them, tell them
if
what to do.
That way.
But
yeah.
We'd have to understand their method of communication first, which is why I guess they're doing this.
And they don't literally mean talking to them. I think what they really mean is manipulating, is learning how to communicate with them.
Situations.
Yeah.
Which help derive a certain reaction or something that works. Really interesting, Billy. Fascinating. That's from Reuters, eh?
Yeah, from Reuters.
Dig into that a little more, folks.
I want to do the second one. And by the way, don't swat a spider. You never know what it might. You might learn something.
Yeah.
It's always been an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always sucked up with the vacuum cleaner.
I didn't know it was there.
Or your hand gets into the
water. Yeah, it was there. Yeah.
And then you're shaking.
Yeah. Smokes,
yeah. You know, and the spider's saying, do you mind? You're not only getting me my meals in here, you're screwing everything up.
Yes. Let's do the second one. Barbershops and artists help to defy vaccine myths. So one of the things, this is actually from Canadian Press, and this is extremely interesting, that in the Latino and neighborhoods of color, where the vaccine, you know, the rate of vaccine is low. So there's a lot of, you know as well as I do, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about vaccines. There's a lot of misinformation. And in these low-income communities, there's a lot of mistrust. You know, one of them is that the vaccine you're going to get microchipped. You've heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So all these myths we're trying to dispel in these communities, and artists and barbershops and beauty salons are doing that. So what the government has done in the U.S. is they have taken selected barbershops in communities and beauty salons, and we're giving them information where you can go to a barbershop. Now, you know, a barbershop is where men go. It's where your friends are. It's where, you know, you confide in your barber. I mean, how many people, it's like confiding in a taxi cab. People confide in barbers and hairdressers because you go there and you create a relationship.
Yep. There's lots of conversation.
There is. And one of that is trying to tell these people that to get vaccinated because it's safe. And basically that is the artists, they're going to be putting out animation films, I guess, on YouTube. It didn't say where, but you'll be able to, the whole idea is dispelling myths and getting people the correct information they need so they can make informed decisions. And
that's right.
In these areas, there's, as I say, there's a lot of mistrust and people don't know what to do.
No. And you think about some of those things, at least if you know I'm going to go get my vaccine, get that chip in me, I'll never get lost because people will always be able to find me. And I kind of laugh, right? Because we have these things being said and people believing these kinds of things, yet as we stroll around with our cell phones, which are tracking us all the time.
Yeah.
For someone to know where we are. And we're okay with some of that stuff. That I think a lot of time, Bill, and this is the problem. If we're not sure, if we don't have access to the right resources, and some people just don't live in a situation where they're able to have those informational, use the internet all the time, do this and that, which might help them get some proper information. I don't want to make out the internet's the solution or the nightly news either, but have that ability or the time to get the different resources. So sometimes we just get it from that conversation why someone's trimming our hair.
Yeah.
Indeed. That's why go ahead.
That's why the location is really important, right? Where you market the good stuff, the good information, the right information, because if you're not getting the targeted audience by putting it up in all these different places, but that's not where people go. And that's not where people, like you said, Billy, confide or just talk about, you know, have even you heard about this? Have you heard about that? Yeah.
You know, we have barbers and, you know, anyone doing your care that way when it comes to where those conversations are happening. And the one unique thing that's all around is there's different conversations in different languages, which helps break it down for people because we know
that's
people
right.
are not getting a lot of information in such a diverse language country as Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We do a funny one at the end, shall we? Bunny
Certainly.
Breaking rabbit. Bunny breaking rabbit stolen in UK. Not an Easter bunny, but apparently last week a rabbit was stolen from someone's backyard in southern England. Get this, 4 feet. Can you imagine a rabbit being that big?
Okay, that's huge.
Scary
huge.
Like, what would happen if it bit you? Or what does it eat? Guinness World Book of Records is this rabbit apparently is the biggest or one of the biggest around.
Oh my gosh.
That's literally
that's like a kangaroo.
Amazing.
Yeah, like you wouldn't even know if it was a rabbit necessarily.
No.
That's huge.
Yeah, would you know?
I was waiting for your punchline. So it was stolen. Have they found it?
Not yet. The police aren't saying whether it was stolen or escaped.
Wow.
But there's a $1,000 reward. And then the woman increased it to $2,000. You wonder how much a rabbit's actually worth. Well, I mean, that's
I've never heard of that size of a rabbit. Like, I thought at first, where's Bill's punchline? I thought it was a joke.
Oh, no. I mean, it's like, I don't want to go near that thing.
No,
tell
Bill.
You.
And I'm going to tell you, if you are going near it, it's definitely sir or madam. That's for sure.
Yeah.
2,000 pounds for people who find it, though.
Wow.
Yeah. What did he say it was 20 pounds or something like that? It's huge, just amazing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The weight.
Yeah. The weight.
Yeah, 20 pounds.
Oh my pounds.
Gosh. It's just.
Hello, sir.
I'm still trying to imagine it's an actual rabbit.
I'm still waiting for his punchline. Wow, Billy. Thanks, pal.
Thanks a lot.
Like, really? Even however he got out and whoever's. I was going to say carrots he's sneaking the whole patch.
Yeah.
Like, he just mows down everyone's food. Mm-hmm. Bill Shackleton joins us Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We call it The Buzz, and we do it right here on Kelly & Company. We're going to wrap up this segment with Billy and move into talking about our audiobooks to kind of get you set for the weekend. Good listens? Yeah, that's what the weekend's all about, isn't it? Well, Ryan Huey's here with a few things on his list to discuss at the Chatty Bookshelf. This week on AMI at the Movies on AMI TV, we're breaking out with The Shawshank Redemption, based on the Stephen King novella. It tells the story of two men who bond in prison. Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman play the lead roles of Andy and Red. Tune in to AMI at the Movie Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV with Rumi and I as your hosts. And as a matter of fact, funny enough, coincidence it is, we're the hosts here of Kelly and Company.
Well, every Friday we like to get into some audiobook chat, and our friend Ryan Huey brings us all the stuff, so let's bring him on.
Who knew an entire library could fit inside your pocket? My name is Ryan Huey, this is The Chatty Bookshelf, and we talk all things audiobooks.
Ryan, I hate to say this, but April's been a pretty slow month for me in terms of audiobook listening. How about you?
How dare you? Thanks for having me again. But no, you know what? There's actually four books that I'm really, really excited about. And I'm not sure if you've watched this, but the hit Netflix series You, the third installment of that just came out in audiobook format, and they're phenomenal. If you think Joel Goldberg is creepy in the show, you should hear this guy's voice. It's unbelievable.
Oh, no.
I can't even watch the show because the books are just, I don't want to say so much better because I do enjoy the show, but it's, to me, there's just no comparing.
Okay.
So it's been quite a hectic month for me already, and it's what, we're on the 16th, so we're halfway through.
Yeah, we are. I think I finished one book this month. You're the only person I know who say there are four books that I'm really excited about.
That's the guy's job. That's why we pay him.
I know. It's amazing. But yeah, I just want to say here that when I'm watching the show, the voice of the audio describer definitely balances out the creepy tone of the main character and his aside. Is that what you call it, Kels, in theater? Mm-hmm. When you're hearing his his thoughts.
When he talks to himself.
Yeah.
Okay. So interesting. I'm assuming, are you, let's say, are you caught up on the show?
Yes.
Are you all the, okay. So I highly recommend going back and listening to the two first books. Yes, I really do. And then I'm about two thirds of the way through, and it came out about 2 weeks ago. This one got put on the back burner because an author asked me to do a review for him. I had to sure, you know what, if you're gonna give me a free copy, I'll absolutely do it for you. But really, really cool series, and I hear there's a fourth book in the works already.
You hear this guy? This guy not only gets paid by us, but he can be bought. Yeah, look, here's a free copy. Do a review. Okay.
He loves that.
You know how expensive audiobooks are when you're not paying credit?
No, Ryan, actually, I wouldn't know that.
You're asking Kelly, really? Okay. All right, so you're always bringing us the latest news in the audiobook world, and seems like everyone just wants to get their fingers into everything audiobook related. So there's some interesting news that you want to share from last week.
Yes, so this actually came out last week, but the release date is set for later in April, and we've kind of hinted at this, and we're like, yeah, who's going to be the first one to do this? You know, we sort of said, we think it's going to be the Giants. We think it's going to be Netflix and Audible, but we were a little wrong. So the first publishing company has announced that they're going to be using a streaming platform like Netflix, but it's actually not Netflix, to kind of put some of their new releases out there. So the streaming platform is available, unfortunately, only in the US. It's the Roku streaming app, and it's Spectrum Audiobooks. So they've partnered up and they've teamed up, and now when you pay your monthly subscription to Roku, you're getting all of everything that they have to offer, the TV shows, the everything, but you're also getting the audiobook experience now too.
What a sidecar we're seeing here with this kind of availability of audiobooks. I mean, I loved it in the days when I could listen to audiobooks through TuneIn Radio, and as soon as they were wiped off of there, you start getting them in other places, including smart speakers, and now through Roku.
No, and you know what? I believe this to be the first of many. I think this too. Is, you know, everyone is hesitant to be the first, but it seems like everybody wants to be the quick second. So I see this being released, and then, you know what? It's just a matter of time before, hey, look at how successful this is. Let's do this. Let's team up. We're, you know, HarperCollins, we're going to be doing it with them, and we're going to, and it's almost like a battle, right? It's like, hey, who's going to have the most, and who's going to have the best partnership and the most availability. So I think this is just a learning point. It's the first step of many, but it's really cool that it's happening because now, you know, I'm assuming probably a lot of the listeners out there have a Netflix subscription. So it's only a matter of time before or one streaming platform or another, it's only a matter of time before there's audiobooks incorporated into it.
Yeah. What other stuff do we know about this so far in the way of information floating around?
So the release date that this goes live is April 28th, and there's going to be 21 new releases of Spectrum audiobooks published by them, and they're going to be the full thing. So it's going to be exactly like you know, watching a movie on there, so you can stream it. So if you're connected to Wi-Fi or if you have any unlimited data, you can stream your audiobook, but you also have the ability to download it just as you do, you know, on Netflix. You can download the season one of this if, yep. if you're going to be on a plane or whatever, and it makes that. So it's the exact same. So that's kind of the big news there. But
what it's going to do for the sound qualities too, because that people are going to be pumping them through their sound bars and so on, that's going to change the whole recording. I mean, already it's great enough, but what little added features and sound or music or whatever they pull out to go along with some of these, it's going to be tremendous.
Well, what an upgrade from trying to do it on YouTube. Did any of you guys?
And you know what? You're
that?
Absolutely right. Yeah, I hate to say it, but yes. But you guys are absolutely right about this, because you know what? I was always okay. I'm gonna play my iPod and play my audiobook through my headphones, and that's the only way I'd experienced it. But because I have the Echo, I don't want to say that, we'll call her the A lady, right, mm-hmm. Ramya? So,
yep.
Listening through there, the sound quality is actually better than my headphones, right? I'm sure it's not as good as a sound bar or as good as the TV or a, you know, subwoofers, whatever you guys have, you know, hooked up, but it's a step up for me. And I can only imagine, like Kelly said, now that he just said that, someone that has, you know, the sound bar or whatever, you know, listening to whatever book, I bet you it's going to be just like a movie experience, just without anything on the screen.
Well, and marking your spots or ways they're going to find for you to be able to fast forward, rewind back to where you were. That's, I think, the trickiest part at the moment. It's not, but I mean, when it comes to accessibility and stuff like that and what you're able to do or not do at the moment, because this is so new, how do you, if you fell asleep, how do you rewind? How do you, yeah. What the features are going to be for that? But I'm sure this time next year that'll be handled.
And you know what? There's some pretty standard features that do kind of fall under that category now, right? That almost every streaming service, whether it's audiobooks, mm-hmm. music, what mm-hmm. you always have the sleep timer, you always have the, you know, this, that, and the other. But right, yeah. So I really think that if they don't have it, then they're doing themselves a disservice, right? Because you think that, you know, if they're able to release, what they're going to do is every month release new titles. So they're going to add at least 5 new titles. If they have the ability to do that, then you should have the ability to, you know, pause, play, and do all your functions. I mean, we can do it through our voices, right? So I'm sure that there's going to be some cool functions released with this. Right now, and just as a side note, they're in beta testing. So there's people out there that already have access to the first 21 releases that are saying, hey, this is what you have to do for this, or this is we're not getting good sound quality, or hopefully there's some accessibility testing. And, you know, they're saying, oh, well, yeah, with VoiceOver, it's great because, you know, you can use it on, you know, your iOS devices, your smart speakers, your TV, there's a whole range of ways that you can stream the Roku app. You can do it on your computer, but unfortunately it's not going to be available in Canada until the summer. I don't know. Yeah. Right. I don't know if, that turns people off, but, you know what, I'm biting at the bit to see how this goes and this turns out, because, I think it's, like I said, the first drop in the hat of many like partnerships to come.
Yeah. Well, I think there's going to be a lot of things to obviously take in and for them to experiment with, but I totally agree that this won't be the first, or it's the first, but it won't be the last streaming service to be taking on audiobooks. And I think that the fact that this is going on kind of a visual platform, not just, you know, podcasting or other kind of audio necessary platforms, right, or audio only platforms, is because they're going to start adding visual elements of some sort, like how people are doing visual albums all over Spotify now. I think there's going to be room for that kind of stuff too, for visual engagement. We'll see where it goes with it, but it's...
I think that's also just the bottom line of having everything in one entertainment center, and that's where you go, whether you're FaceTiming with someone eventually, or listening to audiobooks, or as you say, your music with videos that are going to be, it is just everything will be from these televisions.
Yeah, you can hook in however you want to.
Right, and we're seeing this across a lot of platforms. So I would suspect that you're absolutely right. So even Audible now on, I'm listening on an iPod. I know that's old school, but it's displaying the book title and voiceovers catching that. So when I lock the screen, it's like displayed on the screen is you book title by Caroline Katniss, and it's telling me what's displayed on the screen, and it only does it once, which is great because you know you don't want Siri interrupting your the real voice you're hearing. But I definitely get what you're saying. I would suspect that they're at least at the start going to display probably the book title or the book cover, pardon me, with the book title and some details, you know, track information, that sort of thing. But yeah, I could see it becoming something much more broad and engaging for those with vision, right? Or even with magnification, they can probably enjoy
and
that.
And with so many of the soundbars being internet friendly, so you can just put your apps on those things and available that way, everything is just going to be wonderful, whether it's audio or video medium.
I can't wait to get my hands on a soundbar. That's one of my big things. And my neighbors will probably say, no, don't get one. But you know what? I'm biting at the bit. You know, maybe a Black Friday sale. I know that's a ways away. Or, you know,
say, what kind of disgruntled neighbors are they?
When Kelly upgrades, you can have his, Rye. Right, gals?
Well, it depends if Richardson gets to it first, you know.
Oh, competition. Well. That ended
we'll
real quick.
Have a Royal Rumble or something, yeah. For Kelly's enjoyment, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. So speaking of the apps and stuff, like what's going on there with, because can you utilize it that way from the apps and what ways right now?
Yeah, so it's actually travel friendly, and you can use it from almost any device, which is really, really cool. So, you know, you have your iPhone, you have your Android, you have your laptop you can use it on. There's a website that you can do it there. There's the app that you can use on the Fire Stick on your TV, your Apple TV. There's all kinds of different things. I even hear that now, this is old technology, but DVD players have direct connections to the internet as well, where you can download your Netflix, your Crave, the main apps kind of thing. So I'm assuming that it would fall under that category too, where you can download it. It sounds like they're not limiting themselves to, okay, you can only use it on your iOS device, but no, you can use it almost anywhere. And the fact that you don't have to stream, you can also download the books. It's really cool. Or you can download the episodes or the movies kind of thing. I really like that option too, because I don't have an unlimited data plan.
Mm-hmm. Right. Also, sorry if you covered this already, but what kind of stuff is going to be released? Do we know the variety of the actual types of audiobooks? You have like 30 seconds.
So yeah, Spectrum is they're most well known for science fiction. Obviously, they're one of my favorites, and they do the role playing games where, you know, like your Ready Player One, the stuff where they're trapped in games and they have to figure their way, that sort of thing. But they do a lot of romance and thriller stuff too. So it's a lot of fiction, but they also have branched into the nonfiction too. So look for new releases every month that kind of branch across all those categories. But I guess the first 21 are their most popular sellers, from what I gather. So over the past couple of years, it'll be their top sellers that they're releasing first to get to get everyone to like them. Good marketing.
Awesome. Yeah, it is really good marketing. I'm curious to see where it goes actually, and to see how often they expand their library and things like that and make it more visually, I guess, engaging for a lot of people. But looking forward to it. Thanks for sharing the update with us.
No, I appreciate it. And, you know, get on book 3 in the U series because it's really, really good.
I will. I actually will. Thanks, Rai. Ryan Huey on the Chatty Bookshelf, joining us every Friday to talk all things audiobooks.
And while you're at it, why don't you get on our Book of the Month?
Okay.
Last month, you busted my chops enough. Wow. Coming up next, folks, it's Cut for Time. Jeff Ryman, he'll join us again here on the program. We'll get to that in just a moment. When you have time, folks, check out the Kelly and Company podcast, if you would. A lot of you do out there. We thank you very much for doing so. And it's simple enough. Use your favorite podcatcher, subscribe and download. And, of course, dropping into your podcast feed of Kelly and Company will be our shows in the full version of the program, segments parceled out. And next week, we'll tell you about something new that we'll be adding also to the podcast feed. So stick around for a word on that, probably next Friday on the program. And Well, when you subscribe and download, you can also listen to the full show and hear the audio vanity card that we stick on the end. If you're catching up on shows, you got one this week from Matt, Jeff, a couple from myself. So do check it out. That's the Kelly & Company podcast, available using your favorite podcatcher. Ramya Muthan, my co-host, as we're swinging open the gateway to your weekend and rejoining us, producer Jeff Ryman. He joins us for what we call Cut for Time at this point every week, guys, and we talk about a few of the things that have gone on over the last little while on the program. And what we tend to do, folks, is add a little bit of our own thoughts and feelings. We may have run out of time, so we thought, well, we better be careful, hold back a little bit. So this is the venue in which we get a chance to add a little bit more to some of these stories that we felt as they unfolded, we had a little more to add. We'll start this week with Ramya.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're going to go back to Tuesday where we talked all things water with our nutritionist, Julia Karanchis. And I know we talk a lot about water, guys, here on the show because we're all super fans. But in this clip, she explains just how many types of waters there really are, or at least most of the ones we're familiar with it, and how confusing water can get. So let's take a listen.
You know, when you start to think about it, it can get slightly confusing and overwhelming. Generally speaking, when you go to a restaurant and you ask for water, sometimes they go sparkling or flat. I just bought a humidifier and the instructions specifically say to use distilled water. Mm. And then, of course, I didn't, right? Because I got lazy. I'm like, I got to go buy it, blah, blah, blah. And I used my tap water. And then and then all this calcification happens because there are minerals in our water, which we'll talk about too. And then, you know, way back in the day when I was in nutrition school, buying bottled water was more normal then, because we were less concerned with environment and more concerned with having clean drinking water, which we thought came from a water bottle. So when I was in nutrition school, all the students were talking about reverse osmosis water versus spring water, because, you know, that's what we talked about in our after-school studies then. And those were the sorts of things that you found on the label, you know, reverse osmosis, spring. And then that's when the whole concept of water really changed, because now we had this idea of processed water, right? Like, it wasn't just is what it was, like, you know, water, this natural substance. But now you're like, okay, well, is it sparkling? Is it spring? Is it reverse osmosis? Is it distilled? And what does that all mean? Like, it can get slightly confusing.
Yeah, so in this segment on Tuesday, I talked about how I'm perfectly fine with tap water. Here in Toronto, tap water is what I go to, unless you're traveling and you hear, please don't drink out of the tap water, you know, get filtered water in X, Y, and Z, or buy it at the store, right? But I wanted to also point out that my parents have always bought water bottles, like I'm talking spring water, in the house, and that's what we grew up drinking. And I didn't really turn to tap water until I moved out, and I decided that I'm not going to lug home bottles of water. And that's literally the reason, not because of the plastic, not because of anything else. But they still tend to buy a lot of bottled water. And I was curious, guys, do you have any of this, going back to what Julia said about bottled water, and most of it just saying spring water, right? We don't even know what that is. We don't know where those springs are. It's usually not what we think it is. And we have no idea if it's even filtered or what's in it and what's not in it. But if you guys get caught up in the bottled water world, because it's been a really long time since I've taken part in drinking bottled water. Jeffy?
Yeah, honestly, I have been living on my own for, you know, a year or two now, and I think I've bought only one pack of water throughout the entire time that I've lived by myself. The reason being is, first, yeah, we only just use the tap water. Sometimes on your fridge, you have the filtered water on your fridge. I know with my parents growing up, we had the soft water tanks. We had soft water come through for our showers, which was nice for our skin. And we also drank that. Might have a little bit of a different taste, but I kind of enjoyed it, actually, just at room temperature. But buying water bottles is something I don't even think about, because I just have a huge, and literally right beside me, I have a 2-liter water bottle. And I filled that a couple times during the day with just your ordinary tap water. And thankfully, we're in a region in the world here in Canada that we can actually use the tap water for drinking. It's not always the case, you know, through the rest of the world. So I've always just grown up drinking tap water, basically. And the only time I'd ever use plastic water bottles is, you know, maybe if you're outdoors or going camping or something along those lines.
That's right. When you've moved over to using the reusable, you go to that, right? Kelly, you were going to say, because I know you're a big fan of Brita, right?
No, I never used the Brita because it was too much work. No, I've never used Brita. I use Culligan, right? I have a Culligan machine here, the cooler and everything like that. So technically, it's bottled water. I'd never bought the individual bottled water except for we have any events for Canadian Council of the Blind, our chapter, or my theater troupe, if we needed to have water backstage. What turns me off of a lot of that is the cheap water. The water that's really cheap that has a horrible taste, but people get it because, we're having an event. You want to buy a couple of cases of 2-4 of that? And people just drink it for the sake of I'm outside, I'm hot, or I'm thirsty in a dry theater. Those aspects, great, because people are still drinking water, something friendlier than trying to get on stage after someone, you know, has just drank a soda and opens their mouth to say their first line and more than, you know, the line comes out. You don't want that. But I've always enjoyed the Culligan because I enjoy the taste of the water. That's really it for me. I've always drank it. I don't do distilled water or anything like that, and would never buy the bottled water, but it's just almost an addiction for me when it comes to the amount. And like Jeffy, I've got my big mug here in which to utilize. So Jeffy, we'll hand it back to you.
Yeah, and you know what's really good for grass is water. And that was kind of the topic on our show on Thursday with Susan Kearney, who talked about turf lawn maintenance. As spring is in the air in most parts of our beautiful country. And in this clip, she explains one of the first steps you should follow to have a healthy lawn this year.
The first thing that is usually done is something called aerating. In fact, we had them come this morning and do it. We thought they were going to be coming last week, but they showed up this week. And that is a machine that takes plugs of your grass and soil out of the lawn so that it can breathe and water can get down in there. And I guess once the next thing would be fertilizing. And these plugs they're quite large, and they just sort of sit all over the lawn when this machine pulls it out, makes an awful lot of noise, but it's very good for the lawn. We do this every year. What's very interesting is as soon as it's done, my dogs go out in the backyard and they bring all these big lumps of oil and grass to me. So there's a lot up on the deck I'm going to have to clean up later.
I had to keep that in there, making a mess from the dog, something that I'll have to look out for once I get my pupper, hopefully in the fall. But this is very topical because, and I think I mentioned this a couple weeks back, that I am doing my lawn in my backyard. So basically what happened was when I moved in, half of the lawn was nice and green. I had grass on it. And the back half of my backyard was all wood chips. The previous owners had a jungle gym back there with a slide and swings and all that stuff. So it was not a very ideal thing. Obviously, they took the jungle gym with them. So it was just 50% grass and 50% wood chips. So I bagged up all the wood chips, probably about 20 to 25 lawn bags worth of wood chips. So it was a lot. But it was kind of nice listening to Susan, you know, sort of run down those steps. And that first step is aeration. One thing I didn't do, I will admit that I didn't get a chance to aerate my lawn, which I probably should have done. Mm-hmm. But every other step that she mentioned, number two was fertilizing. And number three was seeding and overseeding. And that's basically what I just did actually earlier this week. As I know here in Ajax, Ontario, we were getting a good dose of rain. So I thought it was going to be the opportune time to get some of that seed down. So just kind of nice to hear Susan run over those steps. And, you know, I've basically followed those steps. I did a lot of research, believe me, throughout the last week. between just Googling stuff, listening to Susan's segments, and watching a bunch of YouTube videos. But hopefully my grass takes, and I'll keep you guys updated. But it was a task. I didn't realize how much lawn work could be. I've always helped my parents when, you know, I lived at my parents' place, but doing it on my own with the help of my girlfriend here at our new home, it was definitely a lot more than I think I expected.
Yeah, well, my dad and I found that, as I was saying when Sue was on here, I wanted to put a little bit of garden area, nice space for visits and friends, and we put sod down, and it was a chore. We wanted to make it look neat and everything like that and fun. What I thought was so amazing was Sue talking about the plugs, and when you really think about, yeah, it must be almost like it chokes it off, and when you pull them out of there, everything just gets together, comes closer, joining up, filling in those holes, and breathing better. I thought that was a really interesting analogy. I kind of found it interesting too, the priority she puts, though. If it's hot, dry, I'm not going to take water from my plants and stuff for the sod. I really thought that was a really interesting, nice piece of advice that people need to understand, that, hey, man, you get a bit of a shower, that grass comes back pretty darn quick, Jeff.
Yeah, it does. And I think the flowers probably look a little bit more pretty as well. Yeah. Having that nice green lawn is something I think everybody strives for, but you're right. I mean, I think just a little bit of water goes a long way for the grass, mm-hmm. the flowers. And of course, if you have some plants back there, vegetable plants, which I'm going to be getting, by the way, I have already ordered a cherry tomato plant, some cucumbers, and my favorite, a jalapeno plant. So looking forward to that.
Ooh.
This is great. That's for the sports watching room.
Oh,
you can guarantee it all.
He's not going to just pick it right off the thing and eat it?
Probably.
Can you imagine him walking around in his backyard doing that? Yeah. Sticking with the same show, though, and now that we're on the subject of food, we spoke with Chef Trevor Louis about National Takeout Day, which had us all very fascinated, and the importance of eating local, especially in these tough times. Now, in this clip, he explains how it's important to order direct and what it means to business to see friendly faces.
Once again, I also encourage people to go and look at the websites of your local restaurants, because yeah. I think a lot of times we just tap an app and go. So check in with your local restaurants, check in on their Instagram, see what specials there are. Call them up and order direct. That way you can save them those fees that they have to pay some right. of the third-party delivery guys. Even that, go for a walk and pick it up yourself. Because you know what people need? Even if it's for that half second of seeing a face, that human interaction really helps people, particularly with mental health these days. We want to see people, even though we can do it safely between barriers and glass. Seeing people in expressions help us get through these tough days. Because I'll tell you, a lot of times, even though we're scurrying to get takeout orders, there's a lot of gaps and lulls where there's no business. So to see other people and expressions help the staff get through the day.
We have a trend, particularly today on the show, we were talking about travel destinations, the fact that so many of us are going to look domestically, which is, to me, almost like looking locally when you've got a whole wide world out there. We've been hearing this for the last year about, well, and before that, eat local, buy some things that are there. We've talked with our nutritionists about it on the program. So hearing Chef talk about go local, go visit, stop in, say hi for the mental health piece, continue to support these places where, for a while, it was just the cool thing to do. Oh, yeah, I found this place. I buy my beer from it, or I buy my this from, this grocer here. And I think back as an old radio show fan about how many places you could go in the old days to buy stuff. Your local grocer. You go to the little restaurant, and you are always there. You were that familiar friend there. And we circle around to just before the pandemic saying this is the way we want things to be. And now, guys, with the pandemic and with these people in dire need, dire help, being encouraged to do something that was so cool to us before. So many of us going out on our walks because we need the exercise and taking a look. Hey, well, I'm going to check this place out. Even if you can't necessarily go in, but you got your mask, slide in and say, hey, you know, I'd like something. It is so important. But you can tell a lot of us aren't doing it enough. And some of these tips about, order directly from them so that you're not giving up that extra, money to Uber necessarily, which is nice. Support them too. I'm not suggesting. And whatever way you can give to these businesses is great. But I really felt some of the things he said there, do a takeout, order right from the place. And it is hard because so many places small or not, are not allowing you to order from them. But I really, his conversation was direct, serious, full of ideas for us, ladies and gentlemen, to really do the minimum to support our locals. Rum, do you have anything on that?
I was just going to say, really, like I was really inspired by some of the things that he said that to me were outside the box thinking. Because, yeah, I have all three major delivery services downloaded onto my phone, Uber Eats, Skip the Dishes, and DoorDash. And I just flip through all three of them over and over again. I didn't even think to order directly from restaurants. I, you know, complain about the service fees, complain about all this other stuff, but I never thought, oh yeah, some of these places are probably doing their best.
Because a lot have gotten rid of the delivery people and they have no control over Uber.
Sure.
They've locked it down.
But Kelsey, if you don't call, you never know, right? So when I called yesterday to see if some of these places around me that I was ordering from pretty regularly do their own delivery service, and they say, yeah, we do. I was like, oh, wow. So yeah, I learned a lot for sure, as you're saying.
Jeff,
yeah, and I think that's very important as well, is that, you know, that delivery charge that goes to Uber or DoorDash or whatever, you know what, it might even be just cheaper to like what Chef Trevor was saying, and just pick up the phone. Or what I did yesterday is I just went into my local pita place and ordered a pita for dinner, you know. Therefore, you can have maybe a bit of a healthier way of doing it, trying something different, you know, the different cuisines that are available. But I think just that having that friendly face come in to the restaurant is, you know, nice for the employer and the employees there. But I think, you know, you can probably save yourself a couple of bucks if you just do it yourself instead of ordering takeout via one of those apps.
And you make sure that at least that couple of bucks you're saving goes directly to the store one way or another. Mm-hmm. And I see Uber and them doing some of that too, but which is good. And it does get to them. Thanks, Jeffy. Jeff Ryman, one of our producers on the program, joins us for Cut for Time. We do this on Fridays. We'll do it next week. Remember, check things out through the Kelly and Company podcast. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up the show. Rum Yamuth and Kelly McDonald, hosts of the program. It's Kelly and Company. Thanks for being with us. Your gateway to the weekend just about fully open. Before we get to teeing up what's coming up on the Neutral Zone when Brock Richardson joins us for a couple of moments in a sec, let's talk a little bit about today's show, Rum. I really loved our travel discussion with Adrian. Had him on for a few minutes to discuss some of the great destinations around Canada that they have pointed out that people should go to. And it really made me dreamy about Dawson and my, as a child, want to go to Quebec City, even though at the time I lived in Montreal. But it still was a mysterious place to me. And I think for me, that's always been an interest. Anywhere that's kind of mysterious out in Nova Scotia, where my family, my mom's side of the family's from, there's a lot of those places in on the East Coast to go to that give you that kind of feel. So I totally get it, versus the people who may want the wine of Prince Edward County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely felt like a bit of a reminiscent as well as yearning segment with all the talk today.
Sure.
I really loved a chatty bookshelf today, Kels. We're getting audiobooks on streaming services. Roku's kicking things off with that trend. We're all kind of on the same page that we know that more of this is going to be coming out. But also just, you know, the information, the way that audiobooks are now being consumed in all these different formats and all these different flexible ways so that people can understand what it is to be audiobook listening is, I think, really exciting news.
Do you have the fear that some stuff is just going to stay? This is like a cut for time thing, and we don't have much time for this. Stay with whoever it is, with Roku, or whatever the deal or the partnership.
Oh, no.
So you're going to have a harder time getting stuff from Audible or see less things. Like, do you worry about that happening?
You know what? Maybe, Kels, but I do see a different side of that when it comes to audiobooks versus, let's say, television, right?
Okay.
When we're seeing that kind of restricted rights.
We'll have to get into that conversation at some other point with the man himself, Ryan Huey. Right now, let's bring in Brock Richardson, host of The Neutral Zone, heard Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern right here on the network. Brock, what's on the agenda for today's show?
So we're going to have a discussion. We're going to revisit a discussion we had a couple of weeks ago about inclusivity in para sports. We had our guest last week, Eric Robesnix, who gave us a really interesting food for thought that we're going to use to piggyback in that conversation. Then Jeff Ryman's going to join us for the second half of the show. First, we're going to start by talking a little bit of the trade deadline, see who, you know, are some of the contenders and pretenders from the trade deadline in the NHL. And then we're going to get into a really interesting conversation about how the Tampa Bay Rays won the American League championship last year, and they received rings and celebrated that. So it'd be a very interesting conversation. All that coming up in the next hour.
Tampa Bay Rays always doing things different, Brock, for sure. Always a trendsetter of sorts. Have a good show, sir.
Thank you.
The Neutral Zone. Brock will be back with us on our show, just as a programming note, Monday for our weekly sports report. But stick around. Their show comes up at 4 p.m. Eastern time with one of our buffers, Jeff Ryman, co-hosting with the gang and having great conversation on hockey and so much. So he'll like that. We know Jeff and his talking sports. Rummy, enjoy, what is it? You? Is that what the show that you and you, Hui are?
Yes. Hmm. Chills. Chills just saying the name.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay.
It's well, creepy.
Take your chills, since it's April. You're not supposed to be having chills. It's supposed to start warm. Well, okay. What am I making up?
Thanks.
It's a cold April. Enjoy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Talk soon.
Folks, on our program Monday when we return, we're going to be learning about a building navigation system that empowers users by helping them navigate indoor environments independently. We chat more with the general manager of Accessible, Jeff Godfrey. On our Tech Talk, Michael Babcock explains how we can use Lis on our Amazon devices. We will learn about an AMI original feature called In Focus, hosted by Laura Bain from Halifax, in which she asked the question, how do you describe your disability? Also, Danielle McLaughlin and her guest, Arch staff lawyer Jessica Demarcus, shares about how an important disability rights case recently decided by the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario And we have the final Monday Buzz with Bill Shackleton, because we're moving him to later in the week. So it's his last edition of it. Producers for this show, Jeff Ryman, Ramya Muthan, Marianne Dion Jones, technical producer Matt Agnew, audio technical supervisor Paula Dineen. Our manager over here at AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Take it easy. Have a great weekend. Now, get out of here, will you? I received my amateur radio license when I was 14. We were speaking of a message Devin dropped to us to read out over the air at the top of the show. And it got me reflecting. Also, a buddy of mine who I was texting with yesterday said that he's really thrown himself back into getting into the hobby. He works in Toronto. His family has a farm north of Toronto that he's able to go out to, and that's where his tower with his ham radio equipment is. And he's enjoyed himself doing that stuff and having that access. And I totally know what he means, and just settling back and having fun with the hobby and reacquainting himself with it, getting on the air, talking to people all around the world or just locally through different repeaters and stuff. And for a lot of us in the blind community, very easy to get our license, because since so many of the war blinded were involved in amateur radio, that really helped a lot of us guys learn it well. I remember my earliest days talking to so many of these guys, older, these vets that were so much fun to talk to. And we got a chance to just soak up all sorts of information. And these were some smart cookies that told us a lot of great stuff about amateur radio. I myself have been separate from it for a while, just with circumstance and not being able to put up antennas, that kind of thing. Do I miss it? Oh, for sure. Am I proud of having my license? Yep. And if it's something you're thinking about, definitely get into it. As I say, my friend has really enjoyed talking to people, and you can certainly know that whenever there were disasters throughout the world, hurricanes or whatever it might be, we were talking to people in those affected areas asking, can we help in any way? Because people would set up stations and they could do that with just a battery. Nowadays, it's so much you can do and so many ways you can help, but mostly you can just enjoy the hobby.
You've been listening to the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.